I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Thank you for being here. It's Friday of a week that has made people in Washington and around the world gasp in disbelief. First, President Trump's surprise firing of FBI Director James Comey. Then the speculation, was it about Russia? The competing explanations, plus some great reporting on what went down. And finally, a Trump interview on NBC contradicting pretty much all of the above. So I totally understand if a separate Trump interview yesterday didn't quite register on your radar. It was with The Economist magazine, and in it, Trump claimed to have just invented the phrase, prime the pump. In addition to that remarkable moment, it was the president's thoughts on economic policy that most stood out for David Rennie. He's Washington bureau chief for The Economist and was in the Oval Office for the interview.
We just said, we would love to hear your description of what Trumponomics is. You know, what is your plan for taxes, trade deals? And then we let him talk. And it has to be said that it was not 100% reassuring.
What did he say that made you nervous?
Well, on trade deals, for example, he does seem to share the views of some of his advisors, who we also spoke to for this big piece, that it's almost as if there's a deal between, say, Mexico and America, if the Mexicans seem to be doing well out of the deal at all, that shows you that America has left something on the table, that others are taking advantage of America. And we would take the view that that's just not how trade works. We asked him about that whole saga of how he was on the very point of withdrawing from NAFTA. If you remember, on his 100th day in office, he was going to dramatically withdraw, and then he decided not to. He told us the backstory from his perspective was that he'd been all ready to do it, but then he'd had a nice phone call from the Prime Minister of Canada. He'd had a nice phone call from the President of Mexico, and they'd asked him, could you think again? Maybe we should negotiate. And so he'd agreed to do that. Now, that's actually slightly different from the story that we heard from people in the inner circle who said it was a lot more chaotic as a process. But in any case, that would have been a gigantic economic decision. And the way that he was describing it seemed very kind of casual.
What did you learn about how Trump's NAFTA about face actually went down?
So we heard some fairly startling stories about how, in fact, the reason that the Canadians and the Mexicans called the president, which they did, was that there were people in the inner circle of Team Trump who called them and said, you need to call him. So there were people inside the White House who were very anxious about what was about to go down. They also called, for example, the new Agriculture Secretary, Sonny Perdue. He had only just been confirmed at this point, I think like a day or two earlier. And he was called and you need to come over here now. He's about to withdraw from NAFTA. So Sonny Perdue literally asked his staff to draw up a map of the bits of America which had voted for Donald Trump and the bits of America, farm country, which do well out of exporting, you know, grain and corn and things through NAFTA. Showed how those two areas often overlap, went in and said to Donald Trump, actually, Trump America, your voters, they do pretty well out of NAFTA. Mm. And the president said, Oh, then maybe I won't withdraw from NAFTA. Which is,
that was it?
That was kind of more or less it. Yeah, that's our understanding, yeah.
If we're to be charitable, isn't it possible Trump is learning on the job?
Yeah, and you can talk to foreign leaders and foreign governments who will say exactly that, that he's actually quite a good listener, that the good news is that when someone like, say, Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel went in and explained to him that Germany doesn't set trade policy, it's set by the European Union, so you have to deal with Europe on these things, that he was like, oh, right, okay. You know, I didn't know that. So the good news is that he's a good listener. The bad news is that often these things, it seems to be the first time he's been told this.
So this was in the Oval Office, this interview. What did the atmosphere there feel like?
The Oval Office, the door was open. There was a lot of noise. There were a lot of people in the room. More people came into the room during the course of the interview. It's kind of like being in a royal palace several hundred years ago, and you have people kind of coming in and out, trying to catch the ear of the king. That's the kind of feel of the Trump Oval Office. I mean, we had a lot of people in there by the end, and he likes to be surrounded by his kind of courtiers.
Your paper described it a little bit like Henry VIII, speaking of courtiers.
Yeah, I mean, there is a kind of Tudor court side to it, and the role of some pretty senior figures, including, you know, cabinet secretaries, was basically kind of to chime in and agree with whatever the president had just said, rather than, you know, offer sort of candid advice or push back on him when he'd said something that might not be factually right.
Speaking of courtiers paying lip service to their king, you witnessed in a little conversation about economics how Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, kind of came to back up Trump pretty quickly.
Yeah, so there was a moment where we were talking about China and currency manipulation, the fact that on the campaign trail, candidate Trump was very ferocious about it, now says that he doesn't want to call China a currency manipulator, in part because they're going to help maybe with North Korea. And he said, and actually, as soon as I started talking about China being a currency manipulator, they cut it out. Now, if you're going to be a fact checker, actually the timing of that is like 2-3 years out of date. China, for the last 2 or 3 years, has actually been spending quite a lot of its own money to prop up the value of its currency. So what was striking was when he made that point, Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, kind of chimed in and said, oh yeah, the day you became president, they changed their behavior. And factually, that just is not right. And it's quite striking to see a cabinet secretary making that point in that way.
Did you get any evidence of the kind of schism between Bannon and Jared Kushner?
So that's a really interesting thing. So a lot of the reporting has said that there's kind of two completely different factions. One, this kind of moderate globalist view led by his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and then the other, this kind of very dark nationalist, angry view. And that somehow those two factions are locked in a fight that one of them might win, and then that somehow will set the policy. Having spent that much time in the West Wing and doing this interview, I would say we came away with a different impression, which is that fundamentally Donald Trump is a nationalist. He's a kind of nationalist with a grievance who thinks that the world has taken advantage of America for too long. It's time for America to be tougher and gruffer and more assertive and more selfish. So if there are different voices, and there are, it's more a question of tactics. It's kind of how do you cut that best deal? Do you bang your fist on the table or do you offer concessions? So I don't think there's a kind of chance that globalist moderate wing is somehow going to win the argument and change Donald Trump. He is who he is.
David Rennie with The Economist, thanks very much.
Thank you.